को बना के स्टेट का पॉलिसीज को वहाँ पे किस तरीके से लागू किया जा रहा है, वहाँ पे ये वॉर को किस तरीके से लागू किया जा रहा है।
Afternoon, friends. My warm greetings to strategic friends, tactical friends, progressive individuals, and democratic forces who have gathered here today. वैसे मैं हिंदी में बात रखना चाहता हूँ, लेकिन एक प्रॉब्लम है कि मैं ठीक से बोल नहीं पाऊँगा, ना आप ठीक से समझ पाऊँगा. So like, you have to bear with me for this, my inability to communicate with you in Hindi. These days, friends, it is very difficult to speak up truth. Certain versions of truth, or say certain versions of misinformation is promoted, while the genuine democratic concerns of the people who deserve justice have been suppressed and denied. At this August gathering, I in fact would like to club my presentation into two parts. One, to express my solidarity to Mati Dari and my happiness with the manner how this program came into existence. And in the second part, I will try to give you an overview, an outline of the situation prevalent in Northeast India with respect to Manipur. I will not delve into emphasizing on factual events and all kind of narratives that will kill time given the time constraints we have out here. And as the speech has to be recorded, I prefer to rely on the short notes that I have prepared last night. I want to begin with this remark that this day is very, very remarkable. The topic of the public seminar, War on People, is really remarkable. I have addressed a similar conference way back in 2009. After that, there has been a big gap on my part due to certain unavoidable constraints, and today I am here on the same topic again. I am thankful to Mati Dari for this. This day is also remarkable because we have conglomerations of speakers and crowds from diverse political, professional, organizational, and national backgrounds. This day is remarkable to me because as we are being brought together by prevailing distressful conditions prevalent in the subcontinent. I again repeat that this day is remarkable because we are not here for merrymaking in praise of a fascist regime. Over the years, particularly in the last few months, we have seen escalation of carnages in the subcontinent perpetrated by the men in uniform who are supposed to be security guardians of the people. The Indian foot troops, called soldiers, whether military or paramilitary or police or underpaid auxiliary contract agents like the ASP or Salwar Zulu or whatever forces they have given them to, mostly recruited from the lower class for lump sum monthly salary, are being exposed to some kind of civil war fronts. I say it again that these foot soldiers are insecure. And they are living with frustrations. They are living with war hysteria in Kashmir, in Manipur, Arunachal Pradesh, Nagaland, Assam, Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand, and other areas where structural operation is being enforced deliberately with muscle powers. They are exposed. I am talking about the soldiers who are being exposed to the war front, the soldiers recruited from the lower ranks. I am speaking on behalf of them, little bit mentioning about their plight. They are there to obey instructions of the rulers that live on their blood and labor for profit. These helpless foot soldiers to defend themselves and to protect their salary and promotions are being converted into an oppressive and killing machines. They are being indoctrinated with draconian laws to indulge in widespread carnage upon democratic forces, patriotic sections, and the masses that are defending economic and democratic rights. These soldiers also suffer losses, and they also created lots of losses and destructions. And these soldiers, many of them are also crying due to pain and frustrations. And in the special economic zones, they are crying. And at the same time, the carnage inflicted Kashmir is crying. The subjugated and oppressed Northeast is crying. Oppressed and displaced masses in the special economic zones are crying. And then exploited laborers are crying. Pauperous peasants are crying. There are only cries. Cries of suffering and cries for justice. I should say that. But one thing is very clear to us. The rulers that have designed these cries are not crying. They never cry. They enjoy the carnage. They enjoy the war. They glorify the war and share war booty among themselves. And of course, we are not here to glorify them. Our gathering today is remarkable because we are here to condemn this carnage. We are here to oppose the war that is being waged in the name of Indian nation's security and development. We are here to share with the pains and frustrations of the soldiers who have been misled into war of aggressions on civilians. We are here to share the pains and cry of our people who have been subjected to a war condition that is being waged against their will. Our gathering is remarkable because this is how we should begin our journey to build a powerful democratic force to bring real development, peace, and democracy in the subcontinent. When it comes to Northeast regions, particularly Manipur and the surrounding regions, I should say that an extensive war front has been opened up under the policy banner of Look East policy, which is now being rechristened as Act East policy. Let me tell you, friends, Look East policy is not an absolutely foreign trade orientation. It has a lot more to do with India's security and commercial interest with Southeast Asian countries is remarkable. But Look East policy is a hype created by the Indian state and its protagonist that covers up the actual geographical space and the mode of operations encompassing the Northeastern region. So Look East policy should be seen as an integrated whole where the Northeast is always involved. The Northeast Vision 2020 published by the Indian state substantiates my point. And my argument is that Look East policy has created a vast geographical hub comprising the entire Northeast into some kind of economic zones for absolute territorial control, economic exploitations, political subjugations, and of course, carnages in various forms. And what becomes inherent with Look East policy is the visible increase of foreign capital intrusions and economic plunder by big market forces. And all this becomes symptomatic and which are to be seen in terms of infrastructural components of what I would like to call aggressive projects to control hydro energy power, carbon reserves, precious stones, minerals, forest products, and of course, market and labor. And the components that have been tremendously enforced includes, you know, railways, dams, mines, and forest resource exportive kind of farming, and then and all other infrastructural components related to roadways and trade-related buildings and commercial hubs. All these have brought about destructive changes on landscapes, in the cultural ecology of the people, in the demographic harmony among the people, which have also created cultural insecurity, and finally, income disparity and underdevelopment. And this policy comes along with heavy militarization, policing, proxy wars, and suppression of democratic voices. Therefore, when one looks into Louis's policy, we have to also relate it with militarization and an increasing amount of policing. And it is against this backdrop that I try to locate Armed Forces Special Powers Act, National Security Act, Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, Seditious Act, and all forms of other repressive laws. These laws became legal instruments that give constitutional validity to an oppressive policy and a very aggressive developmental project. These legal instruments provides the law enforcing forces to unleash a very, very distressful reign of terror with impunity, but in the name of defending India's national security, development, and of course, peace, or say they call it law and order, serving law and order. It is against this backdrop that, you know, there is violations of democratic rights, then economic inequality, denial of proportionate and sustainable development, obstructions to political peace and social justice. And this has led to widespread culture of impunity and, you know, like cycle of violence by the law enforcing forces at the grassroots become self-propelling. Our speakers who have spoken before me have emphasized on the manner how, you know, the law enforcing forces have taken law into their own hand. The situation seems to be similar everywhere across the subcontinent, wherever structural injustice and repressive tendencies exist. So, like on records, we already have 1,528 documented instances of fake encounters. In January this year, a killer cop confessed to me before he made it public that he have killed 133 people, that individually have killed, that cop have killed 133 persons just as a game. Imagine. And he was authorized to do so informally by the higher officers. In fact, this man was responsible for the July 23, 2009 fake encounter in the heart of the capital and brought daylight. The matter was covered up by the State Minister of Manipur and the Home Department. However, Tehelka came up with photographic evidence of the situations and then people resisted and the matter was exposed. After CBI inquiry, this man was suspended along with seven other teammates. But then, why would he confess now? This man began to feel insecure. He thinks that he would be killed by the superior court as the case is nearing to an end. And he thought that confession could either save him or expose the whole modus operandi of sacred killings being commanded over to him by the superior forces. He thought that he have killed for the sake of the country, but later on he have realized that he was just a pawn. That when he got suspended, no help has been coming from the government, no help has been coming from the higher officers. He have to live a very miserable livelihood. And he realized that to save himself and to avenge for the crimes that he committed, he confessed, and the case is still pending in the High Court. And what I would like to say is, like, the structural injustice and killings and fake encounters and sufferings and all forms of oppressions goes together. And these are symptomatic of an aggressive and unjust war that is being perpetrated in the name of the country, in the name of nation, in the name of development and peace. And this war has to be halted if there have to be development, peace, democracy in the subcontinent. I can only trust myself and the like-minded comrades who have been fighting for justice, for democratic rights. And I think we have to build a powerful democratic forces on some common strategic and tactical agenda. Otherwise, we are going to be a loser. Long live democratic struggle. Long live revolution. Red shadow to the comments. Thank you.